Thank you, Kelly. My name is Harry. I am an alcoholic, and I'm coming to you from Asheville, North Carolina. I've done the steps as laid out with the help of a sponsor, making amends, practicing 10, 11, 12. I've got experience with step 12. I'm a little sleep deprived. I'm self-employed. I have an airport shuttle business, and I was up around 3 o'clock in the morning, and I still haven't been back to bed. So I am happy to be here. This is a terrific anniversary. Happy anniversary to the group. Kelly, thank you for chairing. Z for asking me to be involved and to speak. Happy Barb, Irie for speaking. And I've got two cats that are in back of the computer that are, you know, playing right now. So there may be some interruptions. Anyway, this is some really good stuff. Like, you know, hold on a minute. I got to get rid of some of these guys. Oh, this is Julius. He's the new addiction. I had a 20-year-old cat that died about a year ago. This is Sadie. She's beautiful. And okay, guys, come on. Daddy's trying to talk now. Let the adults talk. I just wanted to qualify a little bit more. You know, I got sober in 1984 in Daytona Beach, and I immediately started, became aware of other 12-step programs. So I've been involved in, I guess the first one I went to was Al-Anon, aside from AA, because my brother was, God brought me into AA, basically. So I realized I had alcoholism in my family. Then a new program called Adult Children of Alcoholics kind of came on the scene, and I started attending that and identifying with some of the principles, qualifications for it. I had a history with food my whole life, and I started gaining weight after I got sober. And a friend of mine brought me to an Overeaters Anonymous meeting when I had about 6 months sober. And I started attending and trying to work that program, or at least working some of the, adopting some of the food plans, trying to use it on my own at first. Later, I got more involved with Food Addicts Anonymous and the cup and scale community. After that, I found out about, after I started doing this work, I developed a sane and sound ideal for my future sex life and was having a difficult time living up to it, and discovered another new program at the time, Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous, that some of us started the first meeting in North Florida, in Daytona, in about 1987, I'd say. So I got involved with that. That was a really terrific program for me. That helped an awful lot. Along with, you know, going to AA, I went to Narcotics Anonymous, especially that first 5 years or so, you know, and which was pretty good, you know, like pretty good program, although I felt like I qualified more for AA. So I have a, you know, complicated history with substances and process addiction. I tried to kind of do all of it early on, and I was kind of getting nowhere. I was spinning my wheels. And then what happened, at about a year and a half sober, I met a man who had done it, he was down in Florida from Cape Cod. He was involved with the first Big Book Step Study meeting in existence in Hyannis, Massachusetts, the Hyannis Men's Big Book Step Study meeting. And he had done the work. He had about 11 years sober, and he was spending the winter in the east coast of Florida, getting ready to start a new job up on the Cape as an assistant golf pro. So he was playing a lot of golf and going to a lot of meetings, and I met him. And he had a different message, and the message of doing the steps as laid out in the Big Book, just using the book itself and the black part, augmenting it with nothing else. And what the theory was that AA, since it was 50 years old, had gotten watered down with other things, and the original message of the big book got lost in all that. And so, you know, we were all going to meetings, but very few of us had were actually working the program, and it was watering down the effectiveness of AA. And I that made sense to me, you know, like, because I hadn't really heard any of what he was talking about as far as the technical aspects of working the steps, especially the fourth step. You know, this was all hinged on doing the fourth step as laid out. And I just, you know, I was about a year and a half sober. I was falling apart. I was in a relationship. I was eating. I was, you know, doing everything but drinking, really. You know, the relationship was falling apart. I was a mess. And I was hitting a sober bottom. So I was really willing to get involved with this and do the steps. Like, you know, I mean, I had some misconceptions about whether or not I had done it already, you know, like a lot of people. I've done the steps as laid out in the big book and the 12 and 12 and the little red book and Hazelton guy. You know, I was very enthusiastic 12-stepper, so I didn't really get it at first. I didn't understand what he was saying. But it was made clear to me. And what had happened is we started a small group. There was a few of us who were involved in this work with this guy, Dale. And so in like January 1986, we started the first Big Book Step Study meeting in Florida. Followed about a year later by the one that started in North Palm. And there was another one in right around that same time Stuart, Florida, that was a women's meeting that lasted a little while. But anyway, it was very interesting. You know, I was like, powerful dynamic. First started the first meeting, it was at my apartment on Riverside Drive in Holly Hill. And then we moved, found another place. We moved to a church. You know, a church location, and that was a lot better, because it wasn't my meeting. You know, it was like we formed a real group, and so some of us started getting through the steps. And you know, at first we went to step four, and then went back to one. You know, like until somebody got through, and so this was really painful, very hard. You know, because like I had a desire, I was kind of a people pleaser and a codependent. And I had a desire to be popular in AA. You know, I wanted to be people to like me. And, you know, like I wanted more personality than principle. You know, that's kind of what I was about, you know. And this meeting, you know, with the format, like we wouldn't let people speak if they hadn't done the work. So all these beloved kind of old timers were coming to the meeting. And we were cutting them off, you know, so like we wouldn't let them speak if they hadn't done it. You know, it's like we didn't care. You know, we were trying to duplicate what the Hyannis Men's Big Book Step Study was doing with their format. And it's, you know, like it was social suicide. It was suicidal as far as like wanting to be liked and stuff like that, because, you know, it soon got out that meeting will cut you off if you try to speak. They wouldn't like to speak. So anyway, everybody, I think, in the big book kind of knows what that's like. So that's, you know, what it was like for me when I was this guy with about 2 years of, you know, year and a half, 2 years of sobriety. You know, that's Harry. And, you know, and I did the work, man, you know, like what was described. And practicing these principles in all of our affairs. Well, what does it really mean, practice these principles? Well, the very simplest way that I can put it is, like, I've done all this work, especially, you know, the fourth step with the resentment, the fear, the sex conduct inventory. I learned how to take my own inventory. I learned how to look within when I had a resentment, like, you know, to see where I was selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened in response to all my resentment. What was my part in this? What was I afraid of? How did I what was I afraid that I wasn't going to get? So how did I run the whole show to arrange the world to suit me? Because I'm afraid of my instincts being hurt, threatened, or interfered with. You know, my self-esteem, my ambitions, my personal relations. You know, I learned how to analyze my fears and get this new higher power to help me. Like, you know, what would it be like if I trusted and relied on infinite God instead of finite me? Like, I learned that God's in charge. Like, so what's the problem? And that's deep, at a deep level. So no matter what I do, no matter if I meditate for 20 minutes in the morning or not, God's in charge. Like, you know, like whatever things I do, God is still in charge. You know, that's a deep belief in me. It's better if I meditate. It's better if I take my own inventory. It's better if I go to meetings. But God is in charge. You know, that's what I've learned about this. You know, what are these principles? Well, the principles are, you know, in step 10, basically, it's 4 through 9. 4 through 9 on a daily basis in my life today. I'm taking it, bringing it into my life one day at a time for the rest of my life. And when I have problems, and I do, and I have, I try to find the solution in the 12 steps. That means continued personal inventory. That means I write out resentment lists. I do causes and effects. I do turnarounds. I do fear inventory. I do sex conduct inventory. And I share that with a sponsor or somebody else in AA who understands this stuff and can give me a little bit of guidance, you know, or just hear me. Like, you know, that's the other thing in AA. In Big Book Step Study, like, we don't have circuit speakers. You know, like, we don't have, I don't really think I've ever seen, like, a big, giant state convention have a Big Book Step Study person as their Saturday night dinner speaker. You know, we don't have prepared talks. We don't have canned talks, but we're prepared. We've done the work, you know, and so I kind of jotted down a couple things, you know, references in the book, things that I was kind of maybe more interested to say. I'm going to do that in a minute. But, you know, like, I go with what God wants me to say. Like, you know, I say, hey, God, what do you want me to talk about today? You know, and I, you know, jot down a few pages that I want to, you know, and then I just go for it. I just wing it. Like, it goes out the, you know, my little list goes out the window, you know. And that's kind of what happens when I go meet with sponsees. Like, I don't have a prepared talk for them, you know. I listen to them. I try to find out what's going on with them. And I respond to, like, what's going on in their life, you know, and how are we going to practice these principles in all of our fears? How are we going to apply this 12 steps to this problem or to our lives today? You know, and you know, that's just the way it's been for me. A couple things that I think is really important. I want to go back to there's a solution for a second and read a couple things. It says, page 19, it says, none of us makes a sole vocation of this work. Nor do we think its effectiveness would be increased if we did. We feel that elimination of our drinking is but a beginning. A much more important demonstration of our principles lies before us in our respective homes, occupations, and affairs. So what does that mean? Well, a demonstration of whether or not I'm working this program is how I treat other people. How do I respond to my friends, my family, you know, how am I helpful? Rather than, you know, can I create, am I a producer of confusion rather than harmony still? Am I living on page 52 of the big book with the bedevilments still? If I am, I better, like, do some more work. Another jewel from page 19 of, you know, kind of, I relate this to working with others. Of necessity, there will have to be discussion of matters medical, psychiatric, social, and religious. We are aware that these matters are, from their very nature, controversial. Nothing would please us so much as to write a book which would contain no basis for contention or argument. We shall do our utmost to achieve that ideal. Most of us sense that real tolerance of other people's shortcomings and viewpoints and a respect for their opinions or attitudes, which make us more useful to others. Our very lives as ex-problem drinkers depends upon our constant thought of others and how we may help meet their needs. So, you know, so much for the, you know, my way or the highway thing, you know.
5 minutes.
Thank you. I am there to serve. Like, I am there to serve those people. And so that means, you know, if they have a problem, I'll listen. And I don't really give advice, but I have a lot of common experiences. So, okay, I'm moving into the reading that, you know, applies to, I guess, the part two. 97 says, though an alcoholic does not respond, there's no reason why you should neglect his family. You should continue to be friendly to them. The family should be offered your way of life. Should they accept and practice spiritual principles, there's a much better chance that the head of the family will recover. And even though he continues to drink, the family will find life more bearable. Now we have a whole fellowship called Al-Anon based on maybe that one part of a paragraph. You know, they offered the family our way of life, and so that they'd have a chance to practice these principles. And it's a blessing because I'm not very good at it. Like Erie, you know, Irie said, like, I don't really deal with the family. I don't want to get triangulated between the alcoholic that I'm working with and his wife or his parents and all that stuff. I kind of stay away from them. Tell, you know, if I have a conversation with them, I say, I suggest that they go to Al-Anon, you know, which is now, not the 1938, but the now thing to do. Page 98. Okay, we're getting into some of my favorite stuff. It is not the matter of giving that is in question, but when and how to give. This often makes the difference between failure and success. The minute we put our work on a service plane, the alcoholic commences to rely upon our assistance rather than upon God. He clamors for this or that, claiming he cannot master alcohol until his material needs are cared for. Nonsense. Wait a minute. Aren't we supposed to do service? Isn't service sobering and slimming? Yeah, it is. But what they're talking about here, as far as we put our work on the service plane, we're supposed to put our work on the spiritual plane. That's what these 12 steps are all about. That's what these practicing these principles, reading the big book with a newcomer, asking them if they've prayed first, encouraging them to take their own inventory. You know, that's the spiritual plane. The service plane is running around trying to meet their needs, enabling them, you know, being codependent. Some of us have taken some very hard knocks to learn this truth. Job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of dependence upon God. Burn the idea into the consciousness of every person that he can get well regardless of anyone. The only condition is that he trust in God and clean house. You know, it just goes on and on. There's beautiful stuff here. Page 99. After they have seen tangible results, the family will perhaps want to go along. These things will come to pass naturally and in good time provided. However, the alcoholic continues to demonstrate that he can be sober, considerate, and helpful, regardless of what anyone says or does. You know, these are the principles. If we're practicing these principles, we're able to do some of those things. You know, talks about being able to do things that alcoholics or addicts aren't supposed to do, like go to whoopee parties, you know, go on vacation, go drinking, you know, go to places where people are drinking, stuff like that. I worked in food and beverage for a long, long time. I was a chef for 15 years. I was a waiter in fine dining for 15 years. I know about, you know, wine service. You know, I know about, you know, I've made a lot of my income selling expensive bottles of wine and opening them for them, pouring them, stuff like that. But that was my livelihood. I've been out of it for like 11 years. Oh, sorry, I got a phone call in the middle of all this, almost at the end. Anyway, you know, I've proven that I can stay sober regardless of anyone or anything, you know, good times, bad times, you know, it doesn't matter. You know, I don't drink, I don't use, no matter what. My other programs, you know, I've been inconsistent with food, I've been inconsistent with codependency and sex. But, you know, I'm still in the game and working a program, and I'm really glad to be here today sharing with you guys. And I'm really anxious to hear what my friend Erlen has to say about the history of Big Book Step Study. So have a great day, everybody.